Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for August 18th, 2013. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Welcome, as always, Catherine Smith.
Hello from dreary Atlanta.
Dreary Georgia, Catherine. It's been
yeah,
cloudy
I know.
All weekend.
It's kind of dreary.
There. Yeah, and welcome, Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes. No weather report from Tim. That's good. Well, we got lots of topics to talk about. No guests tonight because we've just got so many topics that we've been kind of pushing back on the back burner and what have you. And I think last week we got through all of about three topics, depending on how you define topics. So we figured we might just do that and have a little more of us. Before we start on our topics, I do want to say I saw The Butler yesterday, and I don't usually see movies the weekend they come out. Saw that one, very good film, even if it was not exactly based on the actual man's life. It wasn't, you know, word for word technically correct or based on someone's life, I'll say. I think it did give an excellent portrayal of the civil rights movement, what have you, even though I think a lot of conservatives have been attacking the movie, is not factual. Catherine, Tim, you seen the movie or seen some of this controversy?
I haven't seen the movie, and I didn't know there was controversy about it. I must have missed that. I've just
yeah.
seen Oprah a lot on TV talking about it, and, you know, there's a lot of buzz about it. But what are they – what, because it's not true?
Well
they're claiming. But, you know, it's probably the young man in the movie got burned by hot water that was making tea, not coffee, and a conservative that just wants to just cause problems because it's, you know, maybe not exactly what they want to see. Says it wasn't exactly true. Tim, what have you read?
Well, I'm seeing something different on the social media networks. They are showing pictures of guess who? Jane Fonda. Who I believe, did she not play Nancy Reagan in this film?
Yes, she did.
Yes, and Nancy Reagan's treated quite well in this film. Not a big part.
They didn't like it because she was in there at all. They didn't like it that Oprah Winfrey was in the movie either.
Well, Oprah's not supposed to act. I mean, you know, that's kind of silly.
Well, you know, they got to say something, right? And they blasted it also as just being, they didn't say not historical accurate. They said it was totally wrong.
So. Yeah, which I love the fact that after I actually saw the movie, then I saw some of the, I was actually looking for something totally different. I was looking to see if the man was, the butler was dead or alive. And then I found out they based it on a different, Cecil Gaines was not the butler. That's a made-up name. But the other man, which the name escapes me, really did live, and it was based a lot on his life with some, you know, ways to enhance it for film telling. Well, they show file footage of a lot of these events, and then they show his son being involved in, you know, like movie scenes, if you will. Well, you know, if you show the file footage of people being, you know, water hosed and chased by dogs and people being kicked after being at lunch counters, and then you show scenes very similar, I don't think that's real creative license. That's pretty much, you know, you're showing what happened very closely. So that seems kind of crazy that people would try to deny that. But I guess there's just people are going to deny everything. You know, you have your Holocaust deniers and what have you, and I think sometimes people that are very, very hardcore with this position kind of fall into that category as well. Well, let's move to a race which I think under the surface probably has a lot more juice than it's getting right now. And that's the Tennessee Senate race, U.S. Senate race. Now, I don't know in the general election if this will be a top-level race. But this could become one of the most interesting primaries, and that's because conservatives just really have no use for Lamar Alexander. I mean, I think he's actually more unpopular with conservatives than Saxby Chambliss, who's not standing for re-election, is, or Lindsey Graham. Tim, would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, I would think so. He is a prime target for the Tea Party types up there. They just are infuriated. You know how that bunch is. They're infuriated by the very fact that somebody dares to hold public office that they don't like. They're searching around for their knight in shining armor, as we see.
Yeah, and we'll get to that. Now, Catherine, have you done much study on this, and do you think he's probably in more trouble in the primary than Lindsey Graham, who has multiple Republican contenders?
I think they're both in trouble. I mean, I think that, like Tim said, you know, the Tea Party folks don't like him, and the GOP is probably not going to come to their rescue.
Yeah,
the other GOP.
They have the people they like. Now, I wonder how much of this stems from the fact during George H.W. Bush's presidency, Lamar Alexander was Secretary of Education, and I think he actually tried to do things for education. He wasn't just vouchers all the time. I mean, he actually said, hey, how can we make public education better, not just the Republican response that's become so popular, vouchers, vouchers, and more vouchers. Do y'all think that some of that's residual effects, or is it more than that, Tim?
No, I don't think it really has anything to do with that. They are displeased with his work as a senator and the fact that he is willing to step across the line and try to make some things happen. They don't want that. They want nothing but pure obstructionism, and they proudly say that's what they want. That's one reason these Republican congressmen have been avoiding town hall meetings so much. Y'all might have been hearing. They don't want to run into that bunch again, because that bunch is starting to turn on them now. So, did they not see in 2010 and 2012 that they lost an opportunity to take over the U.S. Senate for running these clown car candidates?
They're willing to
make a point.
And I think 2012 they definitely lost some opportunities. But then they probably say, oh, that was a presidential year. We do better in off years. And so they may not think about that so much. They may say, hey, this is our chance to, you know, pick our person. And so they're going to just go for who they want. And a lot of cases, it's the most conservative
candidate.
The
popularity with the public, according to the latest polling data, is wearing thin. They have something like now 8%. Identify themselves as Tea Party members, and only 24% have a positive view of the Tea Party. That's not winning numbers there.
Yeah, but that bunch controls so much, if you will. I mean, you see these Tea Party meetings, they get covered almost like the actual Republican Party meetings themselves for whatever reason. I know Georgia.
In your county, that's because they're one and the same.
Yeah, I mean, that's
well,
you know,
I predicted this. In 2010, when all those guys ran, when the Tea Party guys ran, I don't know if we talked about it on this show, but I remember talking about it with my friends. If, you know, the Tea Party is looking for smaller government, you know, they have like all these things that they want to happen. And I asked then, and I ask again, when that doesn't happen, what are they going to do? They're going to strike out at those people. I mean, obviously some of these It's not just people that they elected, but they're never going to be satisfied because it never is going to happen. You know, what the Tea Party is striving for is a very tough agenda to fulfill because they don't want anybody to be elected. They don't want a government. So how can you have them in government? And I mean, once these guys get elected and get there, they realize that, oh my God, this is a huge ship that we have to try to turn. And so they end up, you know, making deals. And so I don't think the Tea Party can last because what they're striving for is unachievable.
Yeah, I think one of the clearest examples is in, I guess, 2010, Charlie Crist was the establishment candidate. He got defeated by Marco Rubio, you know, as a Tea Party candidate. Then 2 years later, Ted Cruz comes in, wins in Texas, and usurps Marco Rubio, and now he's under fire from the Tea Party. And I think that just shows how
right.
much further and further
yeah.
they're going to continue to move. Well, let's
Absolutely.
Move back to Tennessee and talk about these candidates. There's more than one. Now, the one, of course, that I guess we might say is the hottest would be the wrestler Kane, who's also a Tennessee citizen, Glenn Jacobs. He's actually going to literally be in an Inferno match tonight. And speculation is that he has some type of injury. He has to, a legit sports injury. He has to get healed up. And so he's probably going to lose tonight and then be taken off TV for some time. Now, of course, I don't want to get into pro wrestling injuries, but could this also be time for him to explore running for the U.S. Senate? Tim?
Possibly, and he keeps making noise like he's going to do it, but actually what he is a libertarian. So I'm not certain exactly how well he will fit in on some issues. I mean, on some issues, he would be very, very popular with their base. And on some others, if he, like, goes the route of the Pauls, you know, I mean, that's riding the crazy train, some of that. So I just don't know how serious this could get.
Yes, he's very politically minded. I think I've heard that he discusses it with his fellow combatants to the point where they kind of get sick of hearing about it. They're like, you know, even if they agree with him, they're just like, okay, enough. It's not politics all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine, do you think that this is the credible candidate or will it be somebody else?
Oh, you know, these wrestlers, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, like Tim said, he is a libertarian, so he's going to run into some problems with probably with some of his, you know, more libertarian beliefs. How much time is he really going to devote to it? If he's he's hurt, but is he going to be, you know, is he going to, you know, get better and then go back in the ring and, you know, then be distracted again? Or, you know, I mean, I think, and he's very visible, and, you know, who knows what he's said over the past 20 years as a wrestler. You know, we probably have tape on all kinds of, you know, crazy stuff that he's said. So I would say he's probably an attention-grabbing candidate, but probably not the real thing.
Yeah, I mean, well, and that's the thing. We can talk about that. If you've done something crazy in pro wrestling, can it be used against you when it was actually somewhat like an actor playing a part? I know he was involved in some type of incest angle about a decade ago. But then that's like if you play a character in a movie that was a bad guy, could you use, you know, the script against them? That's hard to say. Now, but probably more importantly, this guy, he's unusual looking, to say the least. He's probably like 6'9". He's bald-headed. His eyes, they're not cross-eyed. I don't know how to describe it. But honestly, the guy's build much like a horror character. I think he actually played in a horror movie as the bad guy, if you will. Tim, could this guy scare the voters?
7 feet tall or something like
Maybe under 7, but you know, you would want him on your pickup basketball team. We'll put it that way.
Yeah, he's a bear of a man, and yes, he could. Just his rhetoric could frighten and intimidate the voters, coupled with his massive size, shall we say. And then he also runs the problem of, well, you know, he's a professional wrestler and people love him as that. Would they take him seriously in the political arena? I know about Jesse Ventura in Minnesota, but let us not forget he won that race with less than 40% of the vote up there. Split three-way.
If you had to say a pro wrestler was going to win an office, I think they'd fare better in Tennessee than Minnesota.
I'm sure they would, but Lamar Alexander isn't exactly hated in Tennessee. He's been well-liked. He knows how to campaign in that state. He's from over there in the Republican-rich voting area, just 18 miles from Knoxville at Maryville. And he can raise money second to none. So he's going to be easy to beat.
And I think this gentleman's from East Tennessee, too, which, of course, Tennessee's a state where three large population bases in East Tennessee, Central Tennessee, and West Tennessee. And so I think they compete somewhat for regional pride, whereas a lot of states have one big city and then everywhere else or something like that. They actually have distinct areas that, you know, they kind of get into who's in control. Is it Memphis or Nashville or then Knoxville, Chattanooga together? And, of course, the other Senate seat is the former Chattanooga mayor, Bob Corker. So that's, I guess, both seats held by East Tennessee, if you will. Well, let's get into one more thing off of this. And that would be that Rand Paul, from neighbor to the north, Kentucky, and Tea Party favorite, fails to endorse Lamar Alexander. And apparently this is just a rubber stamp thing that, you know, if you're a senator of your own party, you just endorse them. And if you don't, it's almost like you're running, you know, headlong against them. Catherine, how big a deal is this?
I think that's a big deal. I mean, I think that's sort of an unspoken, you know, rule of a party and of the Senate, is that if you're, you know, fellow senator in your same party, especially the neighboring state, is running, you know, help them out. I think that's – I mean, I don't know how the public would view that, but I think for those of us inside baseball, we think that's pretty much of a slap in the face.
Yeah, Tim, your thoughts on this?
Well, I'm looking at a post from Lamar Alexander's own website in which he says Rand Paul says he supports Tennessee Senator Lamar Alexander's reelection.
But Political Wire, and you remember I sent y'all the link a few weeks ago, Political Wire saying he doesn't. He's failed to endorse him. Maybe there's been some little back-end communique that talks about this. Well, getting back to this, it looks like that Lamar Alexander only has one announced candidate against him. Brenda Leonard, or it could be Leonard, I'm not sure how that, it's not spelled like the traditional Leonard, but she's running against him, and she is, you know, got a little website up, a little picture, and she's running the Republican primary. She's a nonprofit group founder, ex-businesswoman. I guess she no longer does business. She's a Tea Party activist, and she ran for something in 2012. Honestly, she probably wouldn't have as much buzz around her campaign as Kane would or Glenn Jacobs. She's posed with Herman Kane, I see, on her website. Let's say Glenn Jacobs doesn't make this race. Can this lady really have a real chance, Catherine?
Well, I mean, it's going to depend on how much money she has and what kind of support she has. If you know, if the Tea Party comes out raring to support her or someone that's, you know, the not Lamar Alexander, and the wrestler is too, you know, too libertarian for him, she could have a chance, but it's going to take a lot of money to beat Lamar. I don't know how much money he has on hand, but I'm sure, like you said, he can raise money, and I'm sure that he'll be able to get some money. Apparently, I'm just looking at this Rand Paul Lamar Alexander thing. He has not endorsed him, but he's sort of done everything but endorse him, apparently, according to a variety of news reports that I'm looking at now. So, whatever that means.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, I'm having fun looking at the Brenda Leonard website store. If you haven't seen it, definitely go look. You can go buy your very own. Go vote BrendaLeonard.com dog bowl in case your dog wants to get into the act. If you believe in starting them young, for $14, you can get a Brenda Leonard Go Vote pacifier.
I've never seen
a political pacifier.
Wait. Did you say dog bowl or dog bone?
Dog bowl.
Okay. Dog bowl. Yeah, that's just what my dog here needs. Is Jeez.
Oh, hey, there's also a dog T-shirt. And one of the most curious items, they have at least two items that have a T-shirt and a mug that says Volunteers for Tennessee. I'm sorry, Volunteers for Oklahoma, my bad. That actually makes sense. And it's orange, so I don't know if these are Oklahoma, Tennessee volunteer fans, if this lady running in Tennessee just really wants to help out Oklahoma, or if somehow the wrong crap just got in her store. I don't know. Actually, it's four items because she can also get the water bottle as well. $33 for the water bottle. I don't exactly know what it does to the water to make it worth $33, but personally I'm not paying $33 for a water bottle, and y'all can call me cheap if you want to after that one.
Well, we always do.
Yeah, but I mean, that was quite a – quite a price, and that includes shipping.
Yep.
By the time you ship that thing, that's like a $40 water bottle. But looks like Lamar Alexander could be in trouble if he gets a better brand of candidate, be it a ex-world champion or
somebody else. That's what I was about to say, and I'll tell you why. They did a recent poll of Republican voters in Tennessee. Let's see who did it. Tri-Time polling, whoever they are. And it found that Lamar Alexander trailed a generic conservative challenger by 5 points. But at the same time, he has a 64% approval rating among Republican voters. Now, his problem is that only 27% of those same voters view him as conservative, which is bad news in Tennessee, where over half of the Republican voters identify themselves as very conservative, and 85% somewhat conservative. So, you know, it goes back to the old story. Any incumbent that's polling in the 40s is not in the position they want to be in.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And if more candidates smell blood in the water, I mean, you could have a congresswoman, congressman that says, hey, this thing's doable to, you know, make my vote count four times as much. Because to me, if I'm a congressperson in a group of 435 people and I have a great shot to move up and be one of 100 and only have to run every 6 years instead of every two, then I'd have to look at that, you know, long and hard. And somebody like a Marsha Blackburn that has a decently high profile up there in Tennessee and is probably more favorable among the conservatives, you know, somebody like that decides to run, and he could be in real trouble.
Well, there's a group called Beat Lamar. What an original name. And it's a grassroots group, you know, with backing from the Tea Party and some others. And they're going to hold a candidate forum for any interested candidates on the 31st. And they say that will begin the vetting process to find a conservative opponent for Lamar Alexander. He's going to have end up having one or more people run against him. Of that, there is no doubt. I don't know if it'll be this wrestler or if there'll be six or seven people jump in the race against him. If they smell blood in the water, I think it'll be the latter. And in Alexander's case, he don't want a lot of opponents. He wants a one-on-one.
Oh, yeah, so he could then call us support. I love that Beat Lamar has pictures from some event, one on Thursday, August 1st, and apparently one on July 22nd, and it's the same exact pictures. It looks like one of those, you know, find the differences photos.
Well, let me ask a question. Do you both think that Lamar Alexander is probably the most vulnerable Republican incumbent senator next year?
I think if he gets a candidate the caliber of one of the candidates, even just one, that Lindsey Graham has, he is more vulnerable than Lindsey Graham. But since he only has the lady selling dog bowls and water bottles at the moment, Lindsey Graham is still ahead of him.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree. I think there's a chance. I think his chances could diminish considerably if a serious and well-funded candidate gets in there. But as it looks right now.
Well, David, that woman would have a great idea going if only dogs could vote, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Could they afford all these items?
If dogs could vote, they'd only vote for Democrats.
Mine sure
at least yellow dogs. The yellow dogs would be with us for sure. You know, so, you know, we might not get the poodles and, you know.
Hey, wait a minute. Poodles are the smartest dog.
Okay, I forgot about that. They actually are intelligent. I forgot about that. Well, let's go ahead and move to down south. Another state we hadn't discussed in a while since we talked about the woes of the Democratic Party in that state. And that would be the College Republicans over in Alabama. And I guess more or less the Republican Party in Alabama is trying to micromanage the College Republicans. Stephanie Petalos, and once again, I'm just trying to guess a name I've never heard. She's a student at the University of Alabama, and she is the chairwoman of the, you know, GOP Republican or College Republicans, and she spoke to Alabama.com or AL.com, which is like their number one media source. I think it's actually a conglomeration of all their papers, and they kind of pull some of their news resources. Anyway, she actually kind of talked to them about the generational divide between, you know, the state Republican leadership and younger voters, you know, college-age voters. Basically, college-age voters, you know, gay marriage is not this hot-button issue with them. And I've tried to find the exact quote and don't see it, but if y'all do, feel free to step in. But the Republican leaders in the party, the older leaders, if you will, got quite upset with her. And they are trying to, I guess, pass a bylaw that they could remove college Republican leaders and, of course, her for making comments that are not lock in step about on gay marriage. I don't know if that's lock in step on any issue or just same-sex marriage. Catherine, what do you make of this whole thing?
Well, it's not surprising coming from Alabama and, you know, the fear and, you know, hate mongering around the LGBT community and specifically gay marriage and marriage equality. But I think they're shooting their feet with this because I think, we discussed this a little bit before the show started. I think everyone understands, and they may not want to admit it or they may want to try to shroud it in something else, but I think that it's generally believe that as we make progress and as the young people move up into leadership in politics and in not just in politics but in business, and that the marriage equality is going to become de rigueur. Everyone's going to be either in support of it or not, obviously against it. And I think, you know, in 10 years, we're going to look back, maybe 15 years, we're going to look back at this and say, I can't believe that we were so against this, that anyone was so against this. So I think it's kind of a mistake for the Republicans to be so strident on this. I can understand, you know, they might slap her wrist a little bit and say, you know, you really shouldn't talk about this. I don't agree with that, but I can. But to start to put new bylaws into their charter and bylaws is, I think, not very forward thinking. But again, not a big surprise for Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of think it's like maybe that people in the party would like, well, we might not invite her to things, but to literally remove her for having a difference in opinion on an issue, really any issue. I mean, because, you know, if you looked at every issue, I'm sure there's a lot of folks, whatever party, they might agree with their party 95% of the time. And that 5% of the time on that one, maybe two issues, do you say, hey, get out of our tent for that? Tim, what do you think?
What tent? In the Republican Party. But, you know what?
Okay, the umbrella on the stick.
Yeah. Here's what they're using as an excuse. They are just saying no one can serve on the steering committee if they publicly advocate a position contrary to the platform adopted at the Republican National Convention. Let me ask a question. Who in either party pays any attention to the party platform adopted at the national convention? Certainly the nominees of the party never pay any attention to it. It looks like they're just grasping at straws here, but it must have worked. They must have sufficiently scared. Because here is what she now says. The only thing I have to say is that I had an agreement with GOP leaders to not discuss the gay marriage issue further, and they agreed to drop the issue and stop trying to remove my position, so I'm going to continue upholding my agreement with them. So they effectively silenced her.
Yeah. And that's maybe because she has aspirations to move up in the party down the road. Now, but the bigger question, not this one young lady, but younger voters in Alabama. You know, obviously, if you look at the near future, the next cycle or two, you're like the Republican Party in Alabama is as good a shape as any party in any state in America. An Alabama Republican is probably safer than a California Democrat. But in 10, 20, 30 years, when things begin to move, if they don't modify some positions by then, or even if they do modify, is it going to be too late and this does irreparable damage that gives an opening to some Democrats, some places, with some voters, Catherine?
Oh, I think it, I mean, I think that, I mean, I find it hard to believe. I think they will change their tune at some point. It will probably be long after most others have. I think the South on these social issues typically brings up the rear in terms of, you know, changing sort of these kind of policies. But I do think it hurts their it hurts a lot of things. It hurts business. Because generally speaking, we all know, I mean, I think it's generally understood that thriving communities include well-received, welcomed gay people. There's all kinds of evidence about that. And so that's one thing. And then young people, I think, will be resistant to these kind of values and will either choose not to participate in Republican politics, or they choose not to live in Alabama, which is, you know, hurts them overall.
But that won't help move the Democratic Party in the state. I mean, as somebody that understands mission work, the idea of people just leaving a state in droves because they don't like it, that's not going to make a change anywhere. And,
right, exactly.
Move away
but,
from
oh, you
trauma.
Mean the dual benefit? I mean, it might benefit the Democratic Party, but the Democratic Party in Alabama is in pretty tough shape. So maybe this will be an opportunity for them to, you know, draw on a wedge issue that may be to their benefit.
Yeah. Actually, the Alabama High School Democrats, and I don't know how many strong organizations there are throughout America, because usually high school kids are pretty not politically active. They can't even vote. I mean, you know, they're in, you know, so that's something to consider. But they're actually, the Alabama chapter of High School Democrats was recognized as the best one in America. So maybe there is
great.
More future to think. So that's some good news there. Now, Tim, do you think it's going to take maybe a great homosexual running back from a university outside of Alabama, and they invite that university to run that with that running back to run all over the Crimson Tide? Is that going to be how things change? Much like Bear Bryant inviting Sam Cunningham and the USC Trojans to, you know, I guess Denny Stadium at the time, probably wasn't named for him, to kind of move people's opinions forward on race.
Well,
we really aren't going to have that opportunity, are we here?
No, you know, the macho image of sports, you know, comes into play with this, too. But, you know, the bottom line here is the train's already left the station on this one. The genie's out of the bottle. People now understand in this country that these people have not been persecuted are kicked around because of anything they've ever done to anybody, but simply because of what they are. And there's nothing right about that. Everybody knows somebody probably who's gay or is kin to somebody who's gay. These people don't break the law. They're patriotic. They serve in the military. They pay their taxes. They work every day. And their only, quote, sin is their sexual preference that, you know, that they should be able to enjoy like anybody else. So, you know, a state like Alabama doesn't surprise me. And you know, this young lady, this Petalos or whatever her name is, what really infuriated the party leaders over there was two things she said originally. She said the majority of students basically don't derive the premise of their argument for or against gay marriage from religion because we're governed by the Constitution and not the Bible.
Ooh,
in Alabama.
So she really went after him. That's
and and she further stuck the knife in when she said, I think a lot of people would be actively for it if they didn't live in fear of backlash from party leaders. And I'm sure that's the truth, too, especially with young college Republicans and such. The Republicans are killing themselves with this Don Quixote chasing windmill stuff on social issues. I don't get it either. What do people vote first?
Their pocketbook.
They vote their pocketbook, of course. Well, why don't they address that first instead of nonsense like this? This can't be a positive thing, this stuff getting out in the media over this. I mean, it won't kill the Republican Party in Alabama for a long time. Y'all are right about that. But in the long run, it just, this stuff piles up all over the country. This different talk about gay marriage and women's reproduction and, you know, on and on and on about this sort of thing. And it just piles up on them.
Well, you mentioned fighting windmills and what have you, and talking about quixotic battles that they're fighting. To me, even probably a more quixotic battle is the Republican National Committee, you know, the one that's over all 50 states and all the territories,
they have decided that CNN and NBC can't host Republican debates because they are doing film projects on former First Lady, former United States Senator, the person who's probably been the most respected woman more years out of the last 20 than she's not, Hillary Clinton. And because that they're to have film projects, you know, in the works, they are saying no to CNN and NBC. And to me, I think this thing's just crazy because Hillary Clinton, I mean, obviously, even if she doesn't run for president, is worthy of some of these film projects just for both entertainment, for historical significance, and for ratings, as we know. If people think it'll get ratings, it'll get made. So they're kind of just fighting something that's a bit silly. Catherine, what do you think?
Oh, I think it's hilarious. I got to tell you. I mean, if I was at NBC, I'd be like, oh, yeah, fine. We won't cover the Republican primary debates because nobody watches them. we'll do the Hillary Clinton biopic because everyone will watch it. I mean, it's like, you know, 8-year-olds taking their toys home.
Yeah. And they voted unanimously, Tim. What's your thoughts on this?
Well, goodness. Of course, they might be on to something there because considering what went on in their most recent series of debates between GOP candidates, it might be better for them if less people did watch it. Where they are taking a huge gamble, though, is by not letting Telemundo or CNN Espanol show it. That reaches a lot of Hispanic voters. So, you know, let them boycott. They cannot get away with dictating terms to networks about what their programming will be. They don't have to like their programming, but they can't, you know, hold them hostage and say, you cut off a program or we'll do this or that or the other. I'd tell them, you know what, go ahead and do it. What are they going to do now if ABC and CBS both come forward and say, you know what, we're not going to show your debates either if you're going to kick those up.
Here's the big problem, and Tim, you raise ABC and CBS, but this is an issue that wasn't talked about, and I think the Latino Spanish language angle is big, but here's the thing. It's not that NBC was probably going to carry the debate unless it was, say, on Meet the Press, which is the number one Sunday political program. So that is a little bit of a problem. But it's MSNBC and CNN. So that leaves them with one network to have their debates on, and that's Fox. Now, that gets all into the little echo chamber. Republicans watch Fox News. Fox News tells them what they want to hear. They think this is the world, this is America, and they just keep repeating the same thing to the same 35 to 40% of the people. And then when general elections come and there's 51% of the people that aren't with them, they're shocked. And so to me, it's going to be that little echo chamber round and round because they're not going to get any inside input, if you will, from somebody besides Fox News, which everybody thinks is in their pocket. Catherine, do you see this as being a problem, that they're just going to be so insular, even more so with Fox News?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, but I think Tim makes a good point. CBS and ABC are bound to say, oh, wow, so if we play this debate, then NBC is going to, you know, run, you know, George Clooney, Brad Pitt, and, you know, Angelina Jolie on some show at the same time, and nobody's going to watch our network, so we'll just bail out too.
Oh, yeah, I mean, but here's the thing. Primary debates don't even happen on network news anymore. The three presidential debates and the general, the VP debates, they get covered by the networks, but otherwise it's cable news
strictly, and that was the Democratic debates in 2008 as well.
That's right,
and
yeah.
This time, we don't know what the race will look like. If it's Hillary Clinton and, you know, some guy that just wants to get slaughtered, it's not going to be that interesting. Now, if she doesn't run and it's a bunch of candidates, then that means that MSNBC and CNN will have free reign to cover those debates.
Yeah, well, you why cut off whole swaths of potential voters?
Yeah,
access.
It's crazy.
I mean, NBC, for instance, once their Sunday night football game starts, that is normally the most watched television event every week. No, it generally jumps to number one and catapults the network to number one viewership. Why cut them off? Why cut off Spanish language? What about those Spanish language networks? Yeah. You know they'd show some of them.
And that's a different problem there. But I tell you what, I guess they're just trying to, you know, fight the Pyrrhic victory, make a point, because honestly, I mean, I really believe this many years out, that if Hillary Clinton runs, Hillary Clinton wins. And then
yes.
She's probably going to win re-election. And the Republicans need to then focus on holding governorships, winning Senate seats, holding these House seats, staying strong in legislatures, so they can do what they've done, and they've been incredibly effective at winning a lot of races outside of the presidency. And, you know, I'm sure they need to work on that, but they need to not do dumb crap that, you know, hurts them on what they're being successful with. So there's just some free advice, Republican Party. Didn't quite think you'd get it from me. Well, let's go ahead and move to another topic. And we're gonna finally get into some Georgia stuff. I tried to wait since we were so Georgia heavy last week, but this late in the week, the Senate race for Georgia came squarely into Northwest Georgia, and I'm sure it's been in some other places too. And I just noticed how it got covered. Michelle Nunn came in for lunch, and Tim, you were there, and you can add some comments about it on Thursday, and she got coverage all throughout Friday's paper, online, everywhere else, by herself. Then the cavalcade of Republican candidates showed up on Sunday or Saturday to this big event. I mean, well attended. I heard it was like 300 people at the airport, and all these, they came to hear them, but it was just Republican contenders. Nobody got mentioned by name in the headlines. Do y'all see this as a recurring theme throughout this race, in the primary at least, where if Michelle Nunn goes somewhere, she gets single billing, and then the Republicans come in, and it's just all seven of them? Catherine?
Well, of course, that's what happens when you have a clown car running for Senate. You know, they're just going to say, oh, look, the clown car is here. Where if you have one dynamic candidate who's really, you know, essentially running unopposed, she's going to get they are going to get the, you know, lead attention.
Yeah. So, Tim, you were there for the arm folding. Tell us about how the luncheon went.
Well, I didn't go to the lunch. I went to a private meeting after with some party activists, and it went fairly well. She's fairly articulate. She has a pretty good life story. She obviously has a name. She is the best candidate the Democrats could have hoped for next year. That, I believe, despite the fact that I have some private misgivings, I still think, all things considered, that the universe, the stars, throw in a couple of minor miracles, are all going to have to line up together for her to win this race.
Yeah, but the way that this thing was framed, it really showed them. It's like, you know, name ID is huge at this point, and she's getting,
well,
Michelle Nunn comes to town the next day. GOP candidates for U.S. Senate race come to speak at Russell Hanger. You know, it was like that's what it, you know, contrasting. And of course, they have to mention all seven of them. And I don't know Eugene Yu and Derek Grayson, but odds are they're not going to win, and they're getting instead of, you know, Jack Kingston or Karen Handel getting their two sentences.
You keep mentioning the Rome News coverage, right?
Well, and hometown headlines, and I'm sure it's the same thing happened in Waycross or Decatur or anywhere else. It's the same deal.
The best story of it was done on Political Insider, the most thorough one. And it was basically about the Republican side of things, pretty much. And, you know, it featured what all of them had to say. It featured the fact that there was a straw poll. By the way, you had to pay a dollar to take part in it. And Gingrey won that with 34%. And it was heavy on the red meat, as you would expect. And of all things, the U guy got the biggest round of applause for his remarks. So, you know, if you want to really read about what happened, read that one, because that was a very good story. You say 300 people were there?
That's what I heard, and then I did see Peach Fun, it did have the straw poll results. And, you know, this being Paul Gingrich, congressional district, he should be the leading candidate. 35% might even be a little weak sounding, honestly.
Yeah. Kathleen, has this bunch made it to a major appearance in Atlanta yet?
I haven't seen anything about them. I mean, they sort of come and go, but not as a team.
David,
I guess
why
like
did
the
they
Fulton
choose
County
Rome?
Republican Party. Well, because this event at the airplane hangar apparently has become some big event. You know, I remember not in 2002, I believe it's the same airplane hangar that Max Cleland.
I doubt it, because that hangar belonged to Roger Kahn.
Right. This is Earl Tillman. That was Roger Kahn. I forgot about that, but it was because I remember that being a big event. As well, I don't make it out to the airport hangars because I don't have my own private jet, you know, gas that for me over
you
there.
You don't? I thought you did.
No.
Tim and I will have to share.
Yeah, you teach your overpaid teachers, you know. I figured y'all was living in the lap of luxury, huh?
So I don't make it over there very often. So, but anyway, yeah, I get the airplane noise when they fly over too low from time to time. Well, one last story. We're going to keep this Georgia-based tour. I'm assuming it'll be our last story. Doug Stoner, one of the candidates for DPG chair. I believe Mary Squires dropped out, and DeBose Porter's in the race, and
R.J. Hadley.
R.J. Hadley from Rockdale County's in the race. Doug Stoner this past week got endorsed by Governor Barnes. Knowing Governor Barnes is so, you know, Cobb County proud, that wasn't a big surprise. My question to you first, Kath, and then Tim, how big an impact will, you know, Roy Barnes' endorsement of Doug Stoner make?
Very little.
Very little.
In my opinion.
Okay.
Well, you know, I think it's hard to – people need to remember that there's 300 people in the state party that get to – well, actually, it's about 230 with the – because there's some empty seats – about 230 people that vote in the in these elections, and they're all county. Most of them are county party people, with a few, you know, appointments and you know, sort of leadership positions. But most of them are county party people, and I have to say that I think we're all getting a little tired of people who have no. You know, do not participate in the party, don't come to, you know, state committee meetings, don't really, you know, work with their Democratic Party in their county. I mean, they support candidates, and we all appreciate that. But this is a little bit different. This isn't the same thing. And I think people are getting tired of feeling like they're being pushed around. There's this expectation Roy Barnes or the mayor of Atlanta tells you that they want this guy to be the chair, I mean, I'm not saying this against Doug Stoner. I'm just saying that I don't think that this what I'm hearing from people is, you know, these guys should keep their noses out of it.
Well, and I'll say this, and I'm not going to vote in the race and really don't have a strong opinion for him, but I will say this in fairness to Roy Barnes. When he was governor, I mean, running for governor, he really, really wanted David Worley in. I'm sure he backed Bobby Kahn just as he left office pretty hard. I don't get the sense this is that kind of thing, like, oh, I'm this big player and I can just install Doug Stoner. I think he's just doing Doug Stoner a favor. Saying, hey, I'm endorsing.
Well,
I get that sense. Tim?
Well, Catherine alluded to this, but the day before Barnes said what he said, Mayor Reed also endorsed Stoner. How much influence will the mayor of Atlanta have in such a thing?
Well, and
I mean,
how
I
much
think
influence will the synergy of the two have? Yeah.
Well, I think I got to tell you. I mean, I think I mean, it just happened to me the other night. I was at an event and someone came up and sort of cornered me and like, who are you supporting? And I said, well, you know, I'm not really talking about who I'm supporting because I'm on the election committee and I'm trying to remain, you know, I have my personal opinions, but I'm trying to keep that as much to myself as I can, which isn't always easy. And they said, well, you know, you really need to support Doug. He's going to, you know, he's the best guy. He's going to raise the most money and blah, 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 blah. And I mean, I really felt sort of like cornered and I didn't really like it. It was not someone who's ever been to a Fulton County Democratic meeting and they live in Fulton County. Not someone who's ever come to a state committee meeting. I'm sure they come to the JJ dinner and I'm sure they, you know, contribute money to the party or they, you know, encourage people to contribute money. And that's fine. But I mean, I don't know why everybody's so excited about this. Where were they, you know, 18 months ago when the party was, you know, falling apart and, you know, people were being treated badly, employees were being fired for no reason. You know, so I don't have a lot of I don't understand why they're all so excited about it, first of all. Like, they all say that the party doesn't do anything, so why do they care who's the head of the party?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe they see the money as the big thing, you know. And
I don't know that Donna
would necessarily raise more money than the other two anyway. I don't know. Did he raise all this great money as state senator? I don't know. I hadn't looked into the disclosures.
Well,
Tim?
Apparently not enough to win.
Another quick question. You know you have to get a certain percentage. What is it, 40% to win outright?
Oh, no, you have to get 50% plus one.
50 plus one, okay. Is that doable on the first ballot?
I would be really surprised if it was, if it happened that way.
Oh.
I would just be really surprised because I just think there's, you know, there's pockets of people who are supporting each of these candidates from what I gather from just talking to people. And I think we're going to probably, I think we're going to have two ballots.
Mm.
I think we would have had three ballots
if
Mary had stayed in.
Yeah, you could have. Well, let me ask y'all this. Now, just from what you've heard, how is this race breaking down? Is it going to be that people in Cobb, say, are going to be very regional and support Doug Stoner, and then people down in South and Middle Georgia support DeVos Porter? People maybe, I mean, is there any coalitions you can define? Are the establishment, are they supporting a certain candidate? I mean, because there's very little coverage of the race, and it's like,
yeah, because, I mean, who cares?
I don't get a sense of where it's at. Do you know, Catherine?
Well, I don't really have a sense. I haven't talked to that many people. I think you're absolutely right. I think that Doug Stoner will get a lot of support out of Cobb County and maybe a little bit in Metro Atlanta. I think DeVos Porter will get a lot of support from around the state. I think people, you know, his name is very recognizable. He, you know, ran for governor, and he's been in the political sphere for a long time. So is Doug Stoner, but I think DeVos Porter for longer. I think RJ will get a lot of support from R.J. Hadley, will get support from the county parties with whom he's worked very closely and who have a lot of admiration for the hard, very hard work that he's put into his role as third vice chair. So I think, you know, so I think it's going to be pretty well split, honestly.
Yeah.
That's my sense.
Do you
I think
have any
there's
ideas?
Some camps, you know, there's some camps that I don't really know that much about that are sort of battling some of this out on Facebook and, you know, in emails. And so I think,
yeah,
I think it's going to be split. I think it's going to be two ballots.
Yeah. Tell me ideas you've gathered.
Well, you know, I was thinking about the people from outlying areas that are going to be coming. There won't be a large number of them. I think they would be more likely to be uncommitted with this thing. I know that we told our own one person who goes and votes to simply exercise and vote his conscience. And that
yeah.
was the orders he was given. Although I think
and
I know what
yeah.
he's going to do. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's
and
a good way to do
there's
it.
There's a lot of people like that.
It may be. Well, see, here's the thing. I mean, I will tell you, in 2006, when was Jane Kidd elected? Do y'all remember when? It went back
2007.
To 2007.
Yeah.
2007. That race was very much a, Jane Kidd was more of an establishment candidate. Mike Burlon was more kind of insurgent, people that didn't feel like, felt like that maybe the powers that be, I love that term, were in control of things. That was how that race, the dynamic of it came down. The last time when Mike Burlon and Daryl Hicks ran, I don't really know that there was an establishment candidate. This time it seems like you've got maybe two establishment candidates, but there's no real establishment to back them. And you have R.J. Hadley that's maybe a little more insurgent, if you will. The key to be, I think there's going to be a lot of people that might like what R.J. Hadley has to say. The question they're going to have is, can he raise the money? And if he could say, hey, this is how I'm going to raise the most money possible. And people that want to have these pipe dreams of a, you know, $10, $15 million budget every year, that may, that time is just not now. But if he could say, look, this is how I can raise the money, then he may get a lot of people to pull over to his side. I think that's the big question for him. The other two may have to say, hey, this is what I'll do to just work with the everyday party activists. So those are the questions they'll have to answer. Decent assessment.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think a lot of it, like, you know, like Tim said, I think that people will come with an open, some people will come with an open mind, and it's going to be about who gives the, you know, best speech and the best, has the best second and nomination speeches and, you know, how the crowd responds, all this, you know, there's so many dynamics to these kind of elections that it's very hard to know what the best, what's going to happen until it actually happens.
Well, and if somebody's there helping them work the room, that helps too.
Well, they better be.
You know,
I mean, if they don't
yeah,
do that,
I mean,
you're going to lose.
Know how to work the room.
Absolutely.
I've done it before. So I kind of know firsthand how it's done. I've done it twice, you know, once for Bobby Comm, once for Jane Kidd, and I understand how it works. And I don't know, maybe those folks have got some cool in place, and that's good for them. Well, guys, I think we went a second or two over, so until next week, spin the kudzu vine.
Okay. Good night, everybody.
Guys.
Good night.